This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Welcome Inside Black and Gold. Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak feeling that Saints hangover after a 20-19 loss to the Commanders. It looked a lot more grim in the first half of the game. The Saints fought back, and then unfortunate fashion, you go for that two-point conversion to win it all and come up just short. It just sums up, you know, the entirety of this season almost, Jeff. But how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I don't know. I don't think that was the season. I think that was one of the reasons that game feels different is because I had a good time watching that game.
All right, the inability to close, though, still continues.
Sure. But it happened. I feel like it was different in a lot of ways, even though it did end almost identically to the Rams game, right? Like, the only difference is you got the touchdown. You had a fourth down way deep there, and you got the touchdown instead of not getting the touchdown, and then you failed on the two-point conversion. So you got one step further, right? But I can't bring myself to be mad about that game. And that's going to be a lot of what we talk about. Like, there's going to be some negatives that I want to draw out and I want to talk about. But in large part, this is going to be a podcast that focuses on the positives, because I thought there was a lot of positive things that happened in that game. And so we'll talk about it. So in saying that, to me, that means, like, hey, normally after a loss, we'll start with the stock down. Like, we'll go through and say, hey, this is what went poorly, and then we'll have a shorter stock up segment. In this case, I think we approach it more like not like a win, but, you know, we focus on the positives out front, because I think those vastly outweigh the negatives. Even in the sense, like, we just talked about this, like, losing was probably the best case scenario. Like, at this point in your season, when you're basically eliminated, and, you know, they weren't mathematically eliminated going into that game, they technically still aren't.
Right, exactly.
Somehow, if everyone loses all of the remaining games, and the Saints win, there's a crazy outside shot. Like, I think you would need the Falcons, and I think the only way would be, I don't even know. I think everyone would have to lose all their games, and then you would beat the Bucs on an 8-9 tiebreaker.
I think the Bucs basically have to lose out now.
Yeah, Falcons have to basically lose out. But yeah, like, the Bucs beating the Chargers basically ended it for you regardless. Like, that was a loss that the Bucs needed to have, even if you won, to feel like you're really in this thing. So from that perspective, I think losing was the best case scenario. And when you're in a situation like this, and I've dealt with a lot of situations like this growing up, is like, I always go in rooting for a fun game, rooting for my team. I want them to be competitive. I want young players to play well. I want to see positivity. And then at the end, you either win or you lose, and then you're kind of bulletproof, because if you win, you get the excitement of winning. And if you lose, you know, you're kind of like, well, okay, that was probably for the best. Like, I'm not mad about it. So that's how you have to approach it, right? And so I think, you got a lot of things that you wanted to see out of that game, still protected your draft pick, and here we are. So I see it as a win.
All There were some positives in it for sure, but I mean, overall, there were still, you know, too many things that go, we've seen as a consistent issue, honestly, no matter who's been playing. So those are my only, you know, remaining, obviously, downs right now.
I suppose, but every game's going to have negative moments. Like, you're not going to play perfect football games. There's a reason you're 5-9. It's because you're not a star-laden football team, right? So, like, you have to kind of parse it out. Like, it can't be all or nothing. Like, you have to be able to identify the things that you're building on and you're improving on. And so let's start with the stock up and the most obvious stock up. And it's going to be the rattlesnake. And we're going to talk about it a lot here. I'm sure people have comments. We're going to do a mailbag in the back half the back segment, as always. You know, Darren Rizzi's going to talk here in about an hour, and he's going to give us some updates. I don't expect any major news this week. But, you know, the big news this week is, hey, you know, you went in with Jake Haener. I still think it was the right call to start Jake, because you really wanted to see what you had. And I think the way this game went is exactly why I didn't want to start Spencer, because I think this was a game where you had to pull out all the stops. And this was a team that was very ready to make that quarterback shift. And the only thing I did not want to do with Spencer, like, there's a lot of ways you could have finished this season out for Spencer. And I thought in most scenarios, he's getting a significant chunk of playing time. The one thing I did not want to do to him is throw him into a game like this, have it go poorly from the start, and feel like I have to yank him, because I do not want to bench a guy, a young player who I think can develop into a starting quarterback with the right development. I do not want to be in a situation where I have to bench him for a second time in a matter of 2 months. I don't. If I have to do that, I'd much rather be Jake. And it was Jake. And this game started a lot like several of the, I mean, all, let's be real, all of those Spencer Rattler starts started the way it did for Jake in this game, with the exception of that weird second quarter against the Bucks, where they turned it over like three times. But, you know, Spencer got into the game and he looked like a guy who learned from, you know, a lot of the things that went wrong in those first three starts. And that's what you were hoping to see. You know, you sent him in there. It's obviously not a great scenario to go into a game when you're down 17-0. The first time you touch the ball, you're down three scores. But I do think it's freeing in a sense of like, well, I mean, if it gets worse, it's, you know, I might as well just go out there and sling it, because what do I have to lose? Like, we're already down 17-0. Like, let's see what happens. And for Spencer in this game, and I think it's true of Jake as well, the getting off to a good start for a young player in this type of situation is imperative. Like, it can snowball quickly. And look what you saw. Like, in Jake's first drive, he rolls out, finds Cedric Wilson for a big first down, gets called back on a hold, sack, free and out, punt, right? In Spencer's situation, instead of taking a holding penalty on second down and setting up second and 20, which is what I think you want to do when you're facing a rookie quarterback, like, I want to see him execute. Instead, Dan Quinn declined that penalty, set up a third and 10. Spencer finds Dante Pettis for a first down. You're in business. That drive then ends with that Cedric Wilson touchdown pass to Alvin Kamara. And suddenly the confidence is rolling. And I think that's why you were able to build on that throughout the course of the game. If he doesn't complete that, if you punt, you go three and out, you know, maybe the Commanders go down and score another touchdown, and suddenly you're down 24-0 and things spiral quickly. So I just thought this game went exactly how you hoped it could go for Spencer. And he just looked like a confident guy. Like, he looked like someone who learned lessons and didn't just have confidence like yanked away from him like it can when you have those rough starts. So, like, that's, to me, like, when I say I feel like this is a win, that's the win. Like, you have a young quarterback who showed, hey, there is promise here. That three-game stretch against really good opponents isn't the story of his career. He can continue to get better, and that's the name of the game, is development.
It was nice on my end, you know, do the halftime show in the booth with all the guys at the Saints Radio on top of the dome there. And then afterwards, hightail it back to the studio, you know, to get ready for the post game show. Well, by the time I got in to sit down, the Saints were in the end zone again with that Cedric Wilson touchdown pass to Kamara. And I'm looking at, you know, Charlie, our in studio producer, and I'm going, what the heck happened? Yeah. So it was a nice flip of energy, obviously, from what we saw in the first half. And yeah, I mean, I felt the same way as you, and I think a lot of people, that Haener had deserved this shot. We wanted to see what he could do. Well, it wasn't, was not the greatest of showings. And it wasn't obviously just his fault. The O-line still having issues there. But, I mean, for what Rattler got to come in and do, definitely showed a lot to you that as someone that, like you were saying, learned from some of his past mistakes. And it wasn't all pretty for him either, but he definitely looked a lot more comfortable. Or Haener looked like a dude making his first NFL start, let's be honest.
Right. He looked like a guy who was a little overwhelmed. And that's not unreasonable for a guy in his situation. It's just when you made that switch, that was one of the reasons you felt like, hey, I think he gives you a little higher baseline. He should operate a little less haphazardly. And he didn't. He looked just like Spencer in his first couple starts in terms of like it was going real fast around him and he didn't have answers.
What I love too is when Spencer said, yeah, I got told with like 20 seconds left till halftime that I was coming in. And I was like, okay.
Jake was still on the field at that point. Oh, no, actually, no, the Commanders had the ball with about 30 seconds left. So it was after Jake's final drive. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting moment. But no, I mean, you look at Spencer's line and people are going to overreact because every time Spencer breathes, people overreact to what he does. And I understand it. People are excited about him and you should be. His line was 10 for 21 for 135 yards and a touchdown. The big play to Alvin Kamara, that was a throwback to, you know, Cedric Wilson, who I, you know, it's funny. Earlier in the season, I was watching Cedric on the sideline being like, this dude can throw the ball. Like, he's clearly a quarterback. So many of these guys were quarterbacks in high school.
Quarterback controversy for week, 16. What's going on?
It was a nice little ball there. It wasn't a lollipop. It was like on the money. You know, Alvin had to make a really nice catch on it. That's a long throw for a non-quarterback to make. He was throwing across the field, and Alvin made an incredible play on it. Alvin seems like he got hurt on that play, might have tweaked something. But so no, it wasn't perfect. You know, there was a couple drives into the red zone. Spencer got back-to-back passes batted down. That's been an issue for him. He's a smaller guy. He's got to get better at navigating throwing lanes. Back, like every now and then you get a pass batted down. Getting back-to-back passes batted down deep in Commander's territory, you got to be better than that. You know, he had a couple sketchy throws. There was one ball he tried to force into Juwan Johnson. Frankie Louvu should have intercepted it. You know, honestly, his game was honestly not that dissimilar to Jake's game against the Chargers, where he came in and moved the ball. It was a lower scoring game. The difference is you didn't get into the end zone, but like they even tried to throw a throwback pass from Taysom Hill in that game. Like that was a similar situation. He threw, it was a backwards pass to Taysom. He threw across the field to Kamara. The Chargers played it well and it didn't go anywhere. But, you know, like he led four scoring drives, barely had the ball, right? Like the Commanders had the ball for 40 minutes in that game. The Saints only had one possession in the third quarter. The Saints scored on all four of their second half possessions, but they barely had the ball. And, you know, so I just think, you know, you gave Spencer an opportunity and he delivered. I think it's important to couch it in, hey, he still hasn't made a successful start in the NFL. And we'll see what happens with Derek Carr this week. If things go well for him from a health perspective and he's able to get out there in Green Bay, I'd be surprised. I just don't know what benefit you have from doing that. But especially because you're basically eliminated now. Like, why would you send the guy out there with a broken hand? But
that's kind of how like I feel like about like with Alvin Kamara. I don't know if you want to get into that later on, though, probably.
Yeah, we can talk about it. That'll be in the down segment. Like we'll talk about Jake and I don't have that much to talk about. I'm not negative about that much in this game, even in a loss. Before we move on, that 2-minute drill was perfect. Like that's like when I say Jake had some or Spencer had some rough moments. That 2-minute drill is what really capped it off for me as a highly successful performance for him. Like there was some ugly moments, but he didn't get sacked. The Commanders helped him out in a lot of instances because with some really bad penalties. So you do have to kind of couch it with that. That's how you can go 10 of 21 and lead scoring drives on all four of your possessions. But, you know, he got the ball with just under 2 minutes left near midfield or on the Saints side of the field. I think at the 36 yard line. Not only did they go down and score, they used every second of time to do it. And I know there's going to be some debate over whether it was the right call to go for two. One of the reasons that it was objectively the right call is because there was no time left on the clock. When I look back at the Rams game and I say, you know, I question that decision a little bit more if he had gotten to it, because the Rams would have had time to turn around and potentially go kick a game-winning field goal. Would they be as aggressive if they were tied? Probably not. When you're down one, you're gonna get desperate. And we've seen that happen to the Saints already this year with the Falcons, right? In this instance, you are not going to get a better chance to win that football game.
Walk it off, right.
One play from the 2 yard line where they will not even have a chance to have a rebuttal if you score. You know, like, would you feel better about Spencer Rattler in overtime? No. Well, what's more likely going to happen is he struggles, and what would otherwise be this kind of coronation of like a great game would then be like, ah, he didn't get done in overtime, you know, and maybe he does. But either way, like, I have no issue whatsoever in the decision to go for two there. I think it was the right call.
I agree, too. For me, obviously, I come to mind, it's like, well, do I really want Jaden Daniels also back on the field against a defense that's been worn down? You know, obviously, you mentioned time of possession there. Commander's offense was on the field a lot more than, you know, stretching that Saints defense out. And I don't know. I was more fearful of definitely Daniels getting to a rhythm. They end up pulling something out in overtime. I'd rather go for the kill shot right away, too. I thought it was the right move, too. I know you bat it back and forth. You take the, you know, the extra point because you're at home and you send it to overtime. But I don't know. Either way, you could debate things, I'm sure. But to me, I'm also in the camp of you go for the win there just because of how this game shook out.
And where you are in your season, right? Like, again, a loss isn't the end of the world for you. When you have a game where you are literally doubled up in the time of possession, they had football for 40 minutes of that game. That means your defense was on the field for
right.
2/3 of that game. And then you don't want to put it on the defense to go out there and get another stop when you have one play. Like what's the best, like if things went perfectly, you would be in that situation again with the ball in the red zone needing to make a play. You're already there. Do it now. But this is what Darren Rizzi said when he was asked.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you it was predetermined before the game. I just felt like the way the game played out, AK had gone out. He was out for the game. MVS got banged up. We started to lose more offensive weapons. You guys felt the momentum shift there at the end. Listen, I don't regret it whatsoever. I don't think the players regret it. They're all in favor of it. And so I just thought it was the right thing. We managed the clock very well there at the end. I thought the Kendre, you know, Miller ran the ball really well there in the 2 minute, except for maybe the one play which we didn't block great. We completed that ball to Foster. We got the ball clocked. We got the touchdown. We left no time on the clock for Washington, Jaden Daniels. That was the plan. And I just felt, you know, we talked during the drive if we liked our 2-point plays and all that. So when we scored, there was no doubt in my mind we were going to go for two and go for the win.
Yeah, and it's funny because he says it wasn't predetermined. I think it was predetermined in the sense that if you ended up in this scenario, it would make the most sense. And here's the thing, like, I feel like it was determined 2 weeks ago when you made the decision against the Rams that this was going to be your strategy in this situation, right? Because it's an identical situation. It's wild how similar these situations were. You even came down to a fourth down at like the same spot of the field. The difference was, in this case, you could get a first down and you did. There was that weird clock thing that went on and, you know, like, and I understand why people freaked out about it and it was a huge mistake. But at the same time, like, that ball's getting spiked either way. They had plenty of time to spike it. They were taking their time because they had seconds to tick off. If it would have come down to the wire, but like they were being very patient in terms of, you know, no one was necessarily rushing because they had those extra 3 seconds, which they shouldn't have had. But either way, like they're getting that playoff. Like the idea that, oh, it would have ended. It wouldn't end. Like they would have spiked it with like 1 second left. But I mean, that's execution for a rookie quarterback. To execute on that fourth down play, go up, spike the ball, get in the end zone on the next play. One play to, you know, two plays to win it. One of them you got done, the second one you didn't. So the 2-point conversion had a chance to Juwan. Juwan's probably got to make that catch. It's a tough catch. We got to make that catch, you know.
That's been the biggest question, honestly, I've seen today along social media from Saints fans and I guess whoever else with the game. It's really not too much the call of going for the two. It's just who your execution was to. A lot of folks think they should have just handed it off to Kendre there. I really don't know, honestly. Like you said, the ball was there for Juwan. You got it. You got to make that play, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say, like, I don't like the call, but, you know, that's a catch he can make.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe if the ball's put on him a little more instead of out in front of him, he's got a better shot at it. Spencer's on the run. That's a tough throw.
I feel like Spencer gave that look back after it was incomplete, and he kind of looked back again like, really, man?
Yeah, he's got to rifle it in. That's a catch you got to make. And, you know, like the reason it's a tough play is because it's basically a one-read play. Like Like you, like people are like, oh, Kevin Austin's open in the back of the end zone. Like his eyes are never going there. Like he's throw, like Jawan is the first read and Jawan is there. Like Jawan can be hit. That play had a chance. Like you're not going to bypass it because you're in the future and he's not going to make a catch. Right. Like that's the only reason you would go to Kevin is if you don't trust Jawan, but you're throwing that. That's the read. That's the play. So yeah, Kevin Austin's open, but if Spencer got to Kevin Austin, it would have been a mistake. Like that would have meant that he didn't trust the read in front of him, which was open. So I don't know. Either way, that was an exciting football game. And at this point in the season, getting your money's worth is all you can really ask for. Because that's what you got. You got your money's worth of a football game.
You're getting your money's worth come Monday, next Monday.
No, you're not. Because whatever it cost you to get into that game, you shouldn't have gone in the first place because it's going to be a friggin' misery. Although it's going to be warmer than we thought initially.
Yeah, I saw it's like, not ridiculous at least.
Like the low is in the 20s, which sounds like a made-up temperature in New Orleans. It's
unseasonably warm.
If it was 20 degrees here, everything would be shutting down. Like kids wouldn't even be going to school. Up there, that's like, wow, t-shirt weather, you know? Like I would
bet down. Kids are going to stay home.
Packers are going to be out there warming up shirtless in 24 degrees.
Oh.
Yeah, that's beach weather right there. But anyway, let's again, like there's a lot to be happy about with Spencer, and this was the type of performance I feel like you needed him to have at some point in his rookie season to push forward into next year being like, this is what it can look like. If you never had a game like this, you'd go into the offseason and it would be, you'd be like, ugh, you know, maybe this just wasn't the right call and you move on. Like, and I don't think that was going to happen, but it would have been a tougher sell for me if you had never had one of these moments where you're like, that's a starting quarterback. That's what a starting quarterback does. And executing the 2-minute, like, there's a lot of quarterbacks who struggle throughout a game, but you get into the 2-minute and you know, like, this is going to happen for him. Like, Pat Mahomes could have a terrible football game. And if he gets into the final a 2-minute drive with a chance to tie or take the lead, he's making it. Like you're like, well, we're done. If we let it get to this point, we lost, you know? So, I mean, that's a good quality to have. And I got to give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, and obviously mentioned there, too, the lack of weapons you had and how close you were for just one stupid play. Can you get it done? You know, Kamara being out, and then you find out, you know, Valdes-Scantling also dealing with an injury.
Yeah, I mean, he got banged up a couple times in that game. He just took some big hits. Like, I don't think it was anything more than that. Like, he was just a little sore. But no, I mean, he went 6 for 7 on that drive. Completions to Juwan Johnson, Foster Moreau, Kevin Austin. Right. He targeted Dante Pettis. Like these are the guys he's thrown to in a gotta have it exactly situation. And he had it. So like let's move on. Let's hit another thing, a couple other things, because there are other things that happened in this game. You know, with Alvin's injury, this becomes all the more important. So I'm gonna make it number 2. Kendre Miller, I thought he delivered again. Like, yeah, you know, wasn't a perfect game. He had some runs that it's like, okay, I thought he was a little indecisive. You know, the run blocking wasn't perfect in a couple situations. Getting a TFL in that situation in the final 2 minutes that forced you to burn your final timeout as kind of a negative result. But he also had a 12-yard run on that drive. He had an 8-yard run on that drive. He had a 17-yard run earlier in the game. Like, he's just a guy that can pick up chunks in the run game. And I just used back-to-back weeks. Great. Keeps, but like, he's not out of the woods yet, right? We've seen back-to-back weeks. I need 3 more strong games with a big workload, which he's going to have if Alvin can't go. And I need to see him handle it well. Because if he can get through the final 5 games of this season healthy and productive and making you feel like this is a tandem, like, again, I talk about this all the time, and, you know, RIP David Montgomery, tore his MCL. It's a bummer for Detroit. They've been ravaged by injuries. Like, that tandem of David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the reasons that offense is so good.
Right.
And if I can go into next season feeling like I have a legit tandem of Kendre Miller and Alvin Kamara, and I don't need to add to it to feel like we have the weapons, that's huge for me. And I think it's more important for Kendre to show that over the final 3 games than it is for Alvin to show me anything other than I'd really like to get him 50 more yards so he can have that 1,000-yard rushing season, because it would be a shame if he gets to the end of his career and he has that footnote, never ran for 1,000 yards in a season. He's got 950 right now.
See, for me, I mean, it's easy for me to say, I guess. I don't care about that for Alvin. I don't care how the injury is either. At this point, he's getting wrapped up, put on the shelf for next year. And yeah, it's the Kendra Miller show. It's Miller time, baby. Let's go.
I care. It matters.
If get him matters 1,000 yards. Contract, sure.
I mean, what do you, this is the time of year where it's like, just do it. Just get him the yards, man. Even if it's week 18, I'm sending him out there where I'm handing the ball off until he gets the 50 yards and then I'm going away. That means something. I don't know. It might not mean anything to Alvin. I don't know. Like, he's not a guy who cares about that kind of stuff.
I don't think so either.
And this is the type of season where I want nice things. That's it. That's all I want. I just want nice things.
I want to save my 29-year-old back for anything. So I don't. At this point, we mentioned the odds are less than 1% to make the playoffs. Somehow they aren't eliminated yet. But yeah, there's still some kind of odds. But you got to put Alvin on the shelf for me. It's not worth getting him dinged up with something serious.
I understand what you're saying, and you are correct objectively. I still think you're wrong.
I know coaches are trying to, you know, get jobs, but for me, the usage of your most valuable asset isn't necessary anymore.
Again, you're absolutely correct. I still think you're wrong. And we're going to move on.
Let's move on.
Let's talk about something else. Because the other thing that happened in this game, and I don't know if it's just a week 15 thing, like, last year, week 15, the Giants roll into town. Tommy Cutlett's blowing up the league. Everyone's thrilled about Tommy freaking DeVito. Hey! And the Saints throw him on his back 7 times in that game. Like, how many games can you remember? The Saints got 7 sacks. Well, in this game, they got 8. And it's against another rookie. Everyone's excited about it. It's Jaden Daniels. He's only been sacked 29 times all year. He's averages 2 sacks a game. They got to him 8 times. Now, they weren't all real sacks. 2 of them were linebackers tackling him just short of the line of scrimmage on a run, which I don't know. It's like, are those sacks? Like, it's a TFL, right? Like, once a quarterback is a runner, it should be a tackle for loss, but it goes into the book as a sack. So they got 8 sacks. 5 of them are by the defensive line, and those are the ones I'm excited about. The other one was by Ugo Amadi, which is another guy that I'm excited about. I think he's had a really strong season for a guy who just needed an opportunity, and he got it, and he's taken advantage. But man, the defensive line the last 2 weeks, like, it's a much maligned group, right? Like, we've been talking trash about them. They haven't been impacting games the way you needed them to. I feel like they've had 2 really good games in back-to-back weeks. 8 sacks? Like, that's a big number. And they made life difficult on Jaden. I thought Chase Young, Carl Granderson, Cam Jordan, all these guys, they were living in the backfield. They were getting to the quarterback. They were making life hell. And they didn't allow him to take over the game.
Right. No, they definitely they made him ton of times. You saw, you know, him having to run east west instead of north south. Obviously, huge. I thought they did a fantastic job. You know, obviously, we mentioned, I think at the beginning, he was still the leading rusher in the game, but that still was a positive in the end.
That's my problem. That's the only thing. It's like containing Jaden Daniels, and this tells you how good Jaden is, even at this point in his career as a rookie. I felt like the Saints contained him very well in that game. He still was the leading rusher with 66 yards on 11 attempts, 6.0 yards per carry. He only had 1 run. I mean, we talked in this game. I texted you during the game. Like, one of the things that I thought, like, was important for the Saints is not necessarily limiting all of his rushing yards, but on, like, 3rd and 14, I cannot allow him to run for a first down, and that happened 1 time. There was a couple more that he ran, but it was, like, 3rd and 3, and, like, those are tough. Like, it's really tough to stop everything in those situations. 3rd and 14, you got to get off the field, and they did not. It only happened once. But it was a big once. But no, I mean, containing Jaden Daniels, 66 yards rushing, 6.0 yards per carry, 25 of 31. He completed 80% of his passes in that game, and several of the incompletions were wide open shots to Terry McLaurin that probably should have been caught. 226 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. That's containing Jaden Daniels right now. And I thought the Saints did. Like, again, like, I'm saying all these numbers, I still think, like, man, they had a good game against him. I thought they had Willie Gay spying a good bit of the time. I thought he did that well. You know, they got chances at him and got him into the backfield. One thing that I think Jaden's going to need to do is go down easier, because he's going to get himself hurt. There was at least 4 or 5 times in that game that he was just like a tree, like refusing to go down. One time he got away. The other times it was like, you're asking someone to roll on your ankle right now. And I'm not saying they're going to do that intentionally, but it's going to happen. You have a 300-pound guy trying to tackle you, and you're strong. He's stronger than I thought, but he's going to get himself hurt if he keeps doing that. And this is Cam talking about playing Jaden after the game.
Yeah, yeah, he took off for like 60 yards, 40-something yards. How many yards did he end up with? It was 66 yards. Yeah, yeah, it was going to be annoying. You knew he was elusive. If he got past that first read, he was able to extend the pocket out. There's a reason why he's been electric this year. I mean, we knew going in we have to, you know, sort of break down in those lanes, and even when you want to go take your dive at them, you have to make sure that you have your defense rallying. I think that our guys did a great job of rallying. At some point, you know, you knew you weren't, just because you won doesn't mean that you're going to win the rush. You win the rush, you have to be aware of where Jaden is, and that's something that, you know, we have to go move on to the next game with, because we have another mobile type quarterback. Talk about Jordan Love is, you know, great pocket passer, but he can extend plays with his feet as well.
Difficult guy to get to the ground. It seemed like there were several times where it was just wrapped up.
I mean, you know, if you hit him too hard, it's a rough in the passer, as you saw on the other side. If you don't hit him hard enough, then he's able to be, you know, he is a guy who lifts and runs and is an athlete, is overly competitive, overly athletic. And so, if you know, if he pushes for a double, then you got to push for a double. Sometimes you got to suplex him.
And Cam did suplex Jaden one time. Like, it was a clean suplex. Like, if you do it too much, like if you're too aggressive with it, they will flag you. But like, the only way Cam could get him to the ground was by literally lifting his feet off the ground and dropping them. And again, I appreciate that Jaden is like, I bench too. Like I squat 300, 400 pounds. Like I can stay on my feet. But again, like, you are way too important to that team to be spraining your ankle because you're trying to fight through a sack where a 300-pound dude has both arms around you. Just go down. I'm saying this for Jaden's own health.
Did I hear Cam right? Did the Saints actually get a roughing the passer penalty called on the opposing team?
Oh, several. There's two in the fourth quarter alone. Like,
it's unreal. Like, I feel like we haven't seen that in forever.
Oh, the Commanders got flagged a ton in that game. Like, the Commanders did not play a clean game. Like, they lucked out. Like, one thing that's happened this year that's been driving me nuts. When's the last time the Saints forced a fumble and recovered it? Mm. I feel like the last, like, seven fumbles they've forced have ended up bouncing right into the arms of the other team. Like, there was two on Kirk Cousins alone where Peyton Turner got through with a sack fumble and you didn't get the ball. One of them landed, like, in Nathan Shepard's lap. You didn't get that. In this game, first drive of the game, crazy drive, should have been three. Then there was I thought that penalty on Peyton Turner was sketchy at best.
I was going to say right there, please, I don't understand still what the heck happened there.
He said like the long snapper is a protected player, like he's in a defenseless player, so you can't hit him. And apparently when Peyton went up to block it, he crossed the long snapper and got him with his leg. It's like, that's a 15-yard penalty in the NFL? Come on.
And
Darren did not agree. And, you know, Darren, I realized this morning, Darren Rizzi and Danny Hurley are the same guy.
Okay. I could see that.
They're both from Jersey. Darren's 54. Dan Hurley is 51. Both guys love to yell, "You're a fucking joke," from the sideline and get it be caught on camera. I even tweeted videos of both of these things happening. One, they're both from Jersey. One's from Hillsdale. One's from Jersey City. Both coached at Rutgers. Both coached at the University of Rhode Island. Both coached college sports in Connecticut. Both make crazy faces on the sideline. I think I'm actually in next time.
Coincidence? I think not.
Well, when on Wednesday, when Darren talks, I'm going to ask him if he knows Dan, because I mean, like, I think they crossed paths at Rhode Island, you know, and they're both from the you know, area in Jersey.
He's going to be like, yeah, that's my cousin.
Yeah. Well, who knows? They actually even kind of look alike. all right. A couple more that I want to hit. We talked about Cedric Wilson, so we don't need to get into that. Talked about Ugo Amadi, guy taking advantage of his opportunity. Matt Hayball, who I've been giving a lot of grief to, he got reamed out on the sideline the last game. This was his best punting game. He actually, you know, one of the things he had not done all year and had been driving me nuts is pin a kick inside the five. You're not going to do it all the time, but you got to do it sometimes, like when you get opportunities. And he did that. He pinned a kick at the two. He had another inside the 10. I'll take it. I need it. But like, when your punter is not giving you positive game script situations, that's frustrating. So he did today. So I'll give him credit for that.
No, coming up with that punt that you just mentioned that, you know, got killed at the two. That was huge. Just a week after getting reamed out on national television, everybody was talking about, you know, Rizzi on the sideline laying into the punter. So good for Hayball.
Jim Mora.
Right. I couldn't believe Jim coming to the defense of the punter.
Jim Moore was like, "Guy, I think that was a little much." Jim Mora.
I showed Bobby that, Bobby Hebert, and he mentioned, he's like, I think Coach has gotten a little softer in his old age.
I was about to say, like, it was so hypocritical because he would have 1,000%. I don't know if he'd ever yell at the punter. He would yell at his special teams coordinator to yell at the punter for him. But you would not, like, that yeah, miss me with that, Jim. You would have screamed at that guy, too, if you told him to do something specifically and he did the wrong thing. Anyway, diddly poo, whatever. Matt Hayball bounced back. But the guy that I think deserves a ton of credit, and we have not been talking about nearly enough, and I've said this previously, like, at the end of the season, we're going to go back and you're going to ask the question, like, who was the biggest pleasant surprise? What Saints player went into this season with a certain level of expectation for what he could do in this offense and outperformed that by the most? Who would that player be for you? Because I know my answer.
That you went into with,
like, so whatever expectation you went into this season with, like Chris Olave, you went into this season with really high expectations. Yeah. Wouldn't say he got there. A player that you went into with, like, a reasonably low expectations and has outperformed them greatly. Because there's one answer specifically that is correct.
No, I can't say I can think of anyone, honestly.
Fair enough. I should have prepped you for this answer. It's Foster Moreau, right? Okay. Like, you went, no, I don't think anyone went into this season thinking that Foster Moreau was going to be your best weapon in the tight end passing game, but he has been. I mean, you look at his season, he's got, it seems like he's done more, but it's 23 catches, 4 touchdowns, 300 yards, but he's been a security blanket. Like, you get him the ball and he's the one who makes things happen against the Falcons, you know, or against the Browns, right? That fourth down Taysom Hill run, that got set up by Foster Moreau catching the ball on like a 3-yard dump off and creating 7 yards. He did it multiple times in this game where he just got the ball and just plowed for yardage. You know, he's the guy who catches the game tying, whatever should have been game tying touchdown. Like he's just a guy who shows up. Like, he's a big play guy. And you got, like one of the reasons I feel like it's important to point him out after this game is because, like, it'll be forgotten. Like, he's the guy who caught that touchdown that gave you a chance to win that game. Because you didn't win it, it'll kind of be a footnote. Don't forget, you know, rewind to last year in week 7, Thursday Night Football. You're in a very similar situation, and Foster has a chance to make a touchdown catch in the back of the end zone at home in front of the fans he grew up hanging out with, you know, his hometown team. This is a guy who, when you grew up in New Orleans, you like have like daydreams about what if I'm in this situation, a chance to catch that touchdown in that moment with the whole Superdome going nuts, and he blew it, right? And that tore him up, as it should, as it would anybody in that situation. So I just thought it was cool for him to get that moment again and deliver and have that. And I don't think it's not his fault that the 2-point play didn't work. He had his moment there. And like, again, you're a kid growing up in New Orleans. You're a football player. You have dreams of going to LSU and making it to the NFL. Like, that's like, you have daydreams about that type of thing. So, you know, it's a bummer that because of the result, we aren't talking about it as much as maybe we would have otherwise. And I had a really good view of it. If you go back and you watch the replay, there's a guy standing right in front of the Commanders logo who's going like this. That was me.
You know, I think it's a great point, too, at the end, because if things had gone the other way, obviously we're going to play the call of the 2-point conversion over and over again. But yeah, that whole touchdown sequence would have been blasting all day today on WWL radio and probably on the podcast too.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just a bummer that, you know, it's not going to be talked about as much, but hey, you know, it is what it is. Either way, he's my last stock up guy. You got anyone else?
No, you mentioned it too. I thought with Hayball, that one was a nice rebound for him. And obviously the other punter too was doing a heck of a job on the Commander side. It was like a punt fiesta yesterday.
A punt fiesta.
Yeah, exactly.
We should at least give him credit by calling him up by name. Tressway. Tressway. Good guy. Cool name. Tressway. Tressway. I'm Tressway. I'm going to drive home on the expressway.
Yeah, outdoing expectations. Only person I could honestly think of was Scantling, but we didn't have any expectations because he wasn't here.
Yeah, I guess that would be the other answer. But like, your expectations didn't start until week 8. So yeah, but he's a guy that we should mention too. Like, he did have a couple tough drops in that game. Like, I'm sure Jake watching him make that catch in the third quarter, like that Spencer just said, F it, I'm going, he's down there somewhere, I'm throwing it. I'm sure Jake was like, where the hell was that in the first half when I gave you the exact same ball and you just clanked off your hands, man? Like, that's got to be frustrating for him. But it was a great catch.
About it though, when you see the names or hear the calls, it's like, who the hell is catching balls on this team right now? I mean, they're just, it's sad. And, you know, I'm obviously, you're not knocking the guys that are playing right now, but they're not supposed to be your starters right now. You're like, oh, maybe we'll get a look at a guy, a young guy like Bub Means, and he can't even get in the game.
Yeah. But I mean, that's why I can't be mad about this result, right? Like the fact that you played that, the game that you did as a 7-point underdog and had one shot to win it with your backup quarterback that you and benched your starter at halftime, can't be mad about. But all right, let's wrap up this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the duds, some of the things that went wrong. And obviously we'll talk about Jake Haener, the ultimate dud from that game. I'm not going to sit here and trash Jake, but there's stuff that we need to talk about.
Quick shout out to run defense. That's held Brian Robinson Jr. in check too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they played pretty well. I mean, Brian did get off for 65 yards, but 3.1 yards per carry.
Take it. Right. Another one. You're like, that's not bad.
The combination of him and Jaden Daniels was 131 yards on 32 carries, so about a little over 4.0. But that's like, that's success, you know? Like, they didn't get beaten up inside. They did get beat on the outside. They went one-on-one, and they were spying the quarterback, and they said, if he dies, he dies. And this, they dodged every bullet in the second half. So, but all right, let's wrap up this segment. We're going to come back. We'll hit the duds, and we'll do a mailbag in the back end. If you have comments, questions, make sure to get them in there. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. We're talking about the Saints losing to the Commanders. Or so I saw someone in the chat say, why did you call it the Commies? Well, Commanders is a really long name. It's too long for a mascot in the NFL. You got to be able to abbreviate it, and that's the only way that makes sense. So they're the Commies.
Great. You're going to piss off somebody now, Jeff. They're going to get complaints to HR. You're calling people Commies.
Well, don't be a Commie. You know I'm going to call you a Commie. Don't play for the Commanders. I mean, come on. Anyway, let's wrap up that segment. We're going to come back. Who dat? Subscribe. Stick around.